Just over a month after Bill Clinton's inauguration as president on January 25, 1993, Ramzi Youssef's van filled with urea nitrate exploded in the World Trade Center in what, despite the relatively few casualties, was the worst case of foreign-directed terrorism on American soil to date. In April, the Kuwaiti security services uncovered an Iraqi effort to kill former President George H.W. Bush with a car bomb during his visit to Kuwait. On June 26th, the U.S. launched 23 Tomahawk cruise missiles at Baghdad, destroying the headquarters of Iraqi intelligence. It was the first time the Clinton administration used military force and the first such U.S. retaliation against terrorists in 7 years. The events of the first years of the Clinton presidency pushed terrorism up the ladder of foreign policy priorities. Clinton arrived in the White House talking of a new agenda in foreign policy, and a key part of that was taking on the growing international disorder created by non-state actors, ever richer and more ambitious drug kingpins and international crime organizations, for example. From early on, Clinton's national security advisor, Anthony Lake, worried about the growing power of these groups and recognized long before anyone focused on bin Laden and Afghan poppy production that the clout of each set of malefactors would be multiplied if the different organizations began doing business together. In his speeches, Lake called this agglomeration of bad actors the Nexus. America, he feared, was not ready for such a challenge and would need to reorganize itself. From early on, the White House recognized the compelling need to get a better grip on all the information that was being gathered in different corners of the government, not just about terrorism, but also about such matters as narcotics, counterfeiting, and espionage investigations. A central problem was pooling all the information on these operators, because intelligence represented only a fraction of what was accumulating in the executive branch. The country's 70 federal law enforcement agencies and nearly 90,000 agents were constantly collecting material that was potentially not just relevant, but crucial for the conduct of foreign policy. The new national security team wanted to gain access to information assembled for prosecutions that were relevant to foreign and security policy, above all by the FBI and the Department of Justice. Therein lay an enormous problem, which grew out of issues of law and also out of the culture of law enforcement, whose officials are deeply reluctant to share information, sometimes even within their own offices or with other law enforcement agencies. The bar often cited was Rule 6E of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure, which forbids disclosure of grand jury material. The rule, the modern incarnation of a principle whose origins can be traced back to 17th century English legal practice, is meant to achieve a number of goals: preventing someone who may be indicted from hearing of the proceedings and fleeing, preventing witness tampering, encouraging maximum candor on the part of witnesses, and protecting innocent individuals who have been accused and are then exonerated. There are limits to the scope of the rule, and, at least in theory, ways of sharing national security material that do not violate it. For the FBI, however, Rule 6E is much more than a procedural matter. It is the bulwark of an institutional culture, and as Justice Department lawyers readily admit, it is used by the Bureau far more often than it should be. It is one of the Bureau's foremost tools for maintaining the independence that FBI views as its birthright. Eager to resolve the problem in the first year of the administration, Tony Lake and Sandy Berger met with the newly installed Attorney General, Janet Reno, and proposed drafting a memorandum of understanding about the handling of such information. Reno agreed immediately and promised to work on it within her domain, including, most critically, the FBI. Although the issue was revisited many times over the next 4 years, that was as far as matters went. The FBI balked at the proposal, and Reno, although she was Louis Freeh's boss, could never bring him around.